Bullet Cast for life.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to another edition of Under the Radar. My name is Brandon Tanguma, and this week it's going to be a little two-for-one special, kind of a, I guess, one-for-one special, because this is the only thing we're going to talk about on this episode. But I got for you an AEW Full Gear preview, and it's going to be a little different this time because I was in the building at the Kia Forum in Inglewood, California. So going to give you a special little insight. You know, you guys might have listened to some other podcasts, listened to some other reviews of the show, but might not have heard from someone inside the building. So I'm going to run through it, going to give you some of my experience. You know, I'm not going to get too deep involved. I'm not going to give you a full vlog story about what I did over the weekend down in LA, but if you would like to, probably going to do that over at Curveballs and Chair Shots. Check that out every Friday, maybe Saturday sometimes. We drop it over there. So if you want to kind of hear more of my overall vacation, my little trip down to LA, you can scurry on there, but sticking to the wrestling here on this one. But this show took place November 18th, 2023 from the Kia Forum in Inglewood, California, just a hop, skip, and jump away from LA proper. Be a little vloggy for a second. My hotel that I was staying at was literally right across the street from SoFi Stadium. SoFi and the Forum are on the pretty much the same property, so I was able to walk to the Forum. About a half-hour walk. I mean, maybe could have Ubered there, but definitely was not going to Uber on the way back because just the crowd, the line, the traffic, no bueno. But that being said, also, full disclosure, I was, like, kind of tired or kind of really tired going to the show. So that I think that probably did affect my enjoyment of the show or just kind of my experience overall. But we're not going to get into that. I'm going to go from a objective perspective and run down the card, but, and, you know, kind of the little stories actually at the show and kind of some things that I observed. But so get to the show. Let's see, when did I leave? I left about, I don't know, 3:30 ish, maybe a little bit before then. Got to the show at 4. I knew technically the pre-show started at 3:30, but I mean, if I missed a pre-show match or two, I wasn't going to be mad at it. But at the end of the day, I didn't miss one. I mean, I missed, like, the first, like, the very beginning of the first pre-show match, but for the most part, I saw all the matches on the show. There was a few times that I kind of, you know, got up, go to the restroom, or give myself another adult beverage, what? But I didn't really miss any key components of the show in person with my own two eyeballs. But, yeah, get to the Forum, you know, got there relatively early, but kind of late enough because the doors did open at 3, so there wasn't like a super big crowd over there. That's why I kind of wanted to get there later. I didn't want to wait in line and, you know, deal with all that hassle, but I kind of struck it right at the right time to where I got there early enough to where if I needed to get something, I had time to do it and not have to worry about it if there were lines. But to my surprise, wasn't really that big of a line. Overall, I don't know what WrestleTix had the final count as, but last thing I saw, they had it at around near 11,000. I know they were moving a lot of tickets the last week of, or at least the last couple of days up to the show on Saturday, but it didn't feel packed. It was kind of like weird, because I guess I was expecting it to be kind of jam-packed, because, you know, I've been to the Chicago, the All Out, which, granted, was a bigger attended show, maybe, because it's kind of a smaller building. I don't know. But the Forum was less packed and less crowded than I thought it was going to be. I was able to get my I Was There shirt. The merch, they had a outside truck, or not truck, a tent that they were selling merch at when I got there. A lot of the stuff was sold out. They had a few of the I Was There shirts. I did hear that they restocked during the show, or at least beginning of the show. So if I went back, maybe they had some more stuff on there. But honestly, from what I could tell, not that much. And that's kind of a thing I've heard a lot with AEW live shows where they will, you know, the mark on AEW is it's just a t-shirt company, bro. When you go to the shows, there's not that much merch to speak of. Like, they might have your Acclaim shirts. They'll have the Scissor Me or the... I know they've had the Jay White, you know, little cutout, cardboard cutout figurine looking thing and some Danhausen mask and everything like that. But it's not like a full stock run of pro wrestling t-shirt stores. And I'm not expecting them to do that. I'm not expecting them to have, you know, obscure, you know, Nyla Rose t-shirts that like maybe one person would be interested in. But you would think they would have more, you know, some Young Buck stuff, some Omega stuff, Jericho. The only true t-shirt that I saw of a wrestler was Adam Copeland's shirt. Now, maybe that was just the shirt nobody wanted to buy and they sold out of some other stuff, but that, you know, for a pay-per-view LA major market, you think they would have a little more up for grabs. But anyways, sitting wise, I was second level, first row, right where the hard cam side was. So I thought I had a perfect vantage point of the show. It was a great spot. First time ever being at the Forum. Overall, I quite enjoyed it. I know they did some major renovations about, you know, 10 years ago or so. I think it is like around the same time built era as the Oakland Arena. That also went through some renovations while the Warriors were doing their thing over the past 15, 20 years. But, I mean, you can kind of tell, like, on the outside. And, you know, you can kind of see that it is an older building. But it doesn't feel like the Cow Palace. Like, that is an old building, and you go in there, and it feels old. The chairs are all wooden. It's concrete, and it's just not dilapidated or run down by anything. But it feels old. The Forum, I think they've done a good job. They've kind of renovated it to be more of a concert venue than a sports arena like it originally was with the Kings and Lakers. But it's a good venue for wrestling. I know on camera it does kind of look weird because it has the low floor and then like the 100 section is kind of much higher than normal. So I don't know how that came across on the TV show and how kind of people thought about that. But overall, no complaints about the Forum. Service was good. There was plenty of concessions open all over the place. Maybe one thing I would nitpick is I didn't see any like concession vendors like walked around the arena, you know. But if you needed to get up and get a beer or get some popcorn or stuff, everything else was open, so it didn't really seem like that big of a deal. You didn't have to wait in line too much. But enough of me yapping after I said I was not going to go through a whole vlog. But you guys should have known that by now when I say we're going to keep it short and sweet. It ain't going to be short and sweet with your boy. Also, full disclosure, I'm trying something different. We normally record on Zoom meetings, but I'm trying to be fancy here doing the solo podcast. I'm recording on my audio interface, so if I sound different, hopefully I sound better. If you hear all my little breathing and my chair crackling and my hands clapping or whatever, that's probably why, because it kind of picks up more stuff, but just trying it out. Hopefully it sounds better. Hopefully you guys enjoy it. But let's get into the show proper. Pre-show. Well, I don't know why I said that. But Eddie Kingston defends his ROH world title against Jay Lethal. You know, as I said, I missed a little bit of the matches. You know, I heard the entrances, kind of missed the first couple minutes. But this one goes 11:55. Eddie Kingston wins after, you know, I'll let Jeff Jarrett and his cronies get involved. And then Ortiz stops Jeff Jarrett from getting the guitar. This is the other thing is, obviously, there's a lot of stuff, and I kind of forget kind of the move-for-move aspect of that nature because it's kind of hard to really focus in and kind of see what they want you to see and kind of what they're looking for. But also, from what I could tell, there were some things that maybe the cameras didn't catch or the announcers didn't catch that picked up on that we'll get through here. But Eddie Kingston wins. Straightforward match. People like Eddie. The crowd's going to boo Jay Lethal and, you know, Jeff and Karen Jarrett and all those guys. So it was fine. You know, it doesn't say a whole lot for ROH to have your world champion defending the world title in the opener of the pre-show. I don't know why this match really had to be on the show, be on the pre-show. Definitely didn't need to be on the main card because that show is long enough as it is, but, you know, that's what happened. Jumping through into the show, Eddie Kingston cut a promo backstage where he said that every single match he is going to be a part of, he is going to put up both his ROH title and his New Japan Strong Openweight title. So every match he's going to be in is a double championship match. and whoever wins it is going to be the first AEW Triple Crown winner. So it looks as though we're going to get another title belt in AEW. I assume it's going to be similar to the Owen Cup or the Owen Hart Foundation Cup, Trophy, whatever it's called, the Owen Hart Tournament, where you win the thing, you get a title for like a week or two, maybe on television, but we don't see it after that. I assume that's what we're going to get here. I forget if we talked about it a lot on the Bullet Cast proper, but the Continental Classic, I mean, it's an interesting in theory. I wonder how the booking's going to be, because Tony Khan does not like, you know, pitting top guys against each other and giving clean finishes on top of that. And I think for this thing to mean something, that's what needs to happen. It needs to be a G1 type tournament, which is on paper what they're going for. I just don't know in execution it's going to, you know, play out like the top level G1s are. So we'll have to wait and see on that one. Then second pre-show match, this one definitely didn't need to happen, but I mean, if we're going to have a 90-minute pre-show, might as well have some decent wrestling on there. Claudio and Buddy Matthews, this one also goes around 10:30. Claudio wins via submission. You know, just solid, good in-ring wrestling. Fans like both guys. You know, they'll cheer Claudio despite him. Well, I guess both these guys are in very similar roles where they're in heel factions, presumably, but they're kind of cool heel factions, so the crowd likes both of them. And they'll cheer for both guys. They'll pop for all the moves. They'll, you know, maybe boo if one of them cheats and they'll favor the other one. But yeah, it was just kind of like your typical, like, super indie type of match where the crowd's not really invested in the match per se. But why would they? Because there's never, like, really nothing behind it. And it was a good match. So nothing really else to say there. Then main event of the pre-show, MJF and Samoa Joe defend the ROH World Tag Titles against the Guns. And this is kind of like what the whole show kind of revolves around. It all started right here. MJF and Samoa Joe retain via submission. This one goes 9:25, so just under 10 minutes. Not a long match. You know, some good storytelling. I'm high on the Guns. Colton especially, I think he has something. Austin, you know, a little bit more on the goofy side right there with Juice, but I think Colton, there is something there with Colton Gunn. But Samoa Joe, I believe, I forget which one exactly, but chokes out one of the Guns to get the victory. So Samoa Joe wins the titles for MJF, retains the titles for MJF. And so I would assume Joe's going to hold that over MJF's head, and we're probably going to build towards an MJF-Samoa Joe feud, you know, later on down the line, maybe at Collision or whatever it's called, Continental World's End. That's what it's called. But yeah, you know, it was a goofy little match. You know, crowd was into pretty much everything these guys were doing. And then after the match, the Guns Pillmanize MJF's leg. Samoa Joe leaves because he, I mean, not that he, whatever, you guys know what I'm talking about. They Pillmanize MJF's leg. They cart him off into a stretcher him off, put him in the ambulance. And we the one thing is you couldn't hear the audio going throughout the arena. They played the video on the screen, which the screen is, we'll talk about that later. They played the video on the screen, but you couldn't hear what they were saying. Like, you could tell that MJF was in, you know, pain and, you know, yelling at Adam Cole about something. Probably you could infer what he ultimately was saying, but we just couldn't hear the words come out of his mouth. So then fade to black, start the pay-per-view off. I guess we'll just kind of round everything together with the storyline. You know, they sprinkle throughout where they have the promo with Tony Schiavone, Adam Cole, Jay White. And I did not like this. I just don't understand what they were going for. They're trying to tell a story here. Tony Khan is adamant that they've planned these things out. They know where they're going. I understand the Adam Cole injury kind of threw a wrench in everything. If it is a real injury, who knows? But so anyways, as you know, I presume, rude for me to presume, I'm sorry, but Adam Cole says he's going to fight in the honor of his friend MJF, and he's going to defend the world title against Jay White. So they do this because MJF is medically cleared to compete. the guy who got his leg pilmanized. Okay, understandable. That hurts. He's probably not going to be able to get cleared. But instead of canceling the match or whatever the hell it is, they at first were going to reward Jay White with the title, which is like so stupid. Why would you reward the guy who they, you know, his minions hurt their world champion? So you're just going to give him the title because obviously he put him up to this or whatever the case may be. That makes zero sense. Then you add Adam Cole into the mix where he says he's going to wrestle Jay White when he has a boot on, he's on crutches, he's in street clothes, and no condition to wrestle. Should not be able to get cleared. If they're not going to clear him, Jeff, why the hell would they allow Adam Cole to do this? But yet, they put him in the match, they tease it throughout, they do the, you know, replay of MJF saying, don't let him take my title, Adam, and all that stuff. They put the graphic up multiple times. Don't know how the commentators are framing this, but just me personally, I was like, what the hell are we doing? You're teasing that Adam Cole is going to wrestle a match, and like, maybe he will wrestle. I mean, I just thought it was so stupid. Like, maybe their theory is they're trying to build up suspense, thinking that Jay White is going to lose, or, you know, Jay White's going to win the championship. And I think the problem was they had the ending in mind of MJF coming back, you know, heroically fighting Jay White and, you know, being the prevailing champion, and him and his best friend are going to, you know, conquer all. But just everything in the middle just was so stupid and so illogical. And it was just kind of a capsule of like everything I'm not a big fan of with this MJF Adam Cole stuff, where it just MJF Jay White could have had a really solid match, and they like technically did have a really good match at the end of the night, but I just didn't, earmuffs everybody, children, I just don't think they needed this bullshit in the middle of all this. Like, just have MJF, like, maybe do, like, you can do an angle where maybe they attack him or whatever, and Samoa Joe runs them off or, at like, something. You can tell the story that MJF is hurt a little bit going into the match. Okay, cool. But they didn't need to go so far over the edge where he has to get, you know, ambulance, Adam Cole, yada, yada, yada. You didn't need to do all that. They could have just had a good, straightforward match, maybe have a little bit of that injury angle built in, but it didn't need to go that far because it made zero sense why Adam Cole, who has a boot on, he had ankle surgery apparently like a month ago because he's a little simp who can't say no to Roderick Strong for some reason. Anyways, I'm just going to go all the way to the main event. They did the thing. Adam Cole gets the whole boom, gets the whole kit and caboodle entrance. Looks like they're going to it. Jay White comes out. He has a championship. I'm sitting there looking like, okay. I mean, I guess they're doing this. I thought we would get like some sort of, MJF comes out beforehand. But no, MJF comes out right when the bell was supposed to ring. Convenient. And he hobbles his way down to the ring. We have like the entire backstage staff, all the referees come out to stop MJF, but yet nobody stopped Adam Cole. No one thought maybe we shouldn't have this guy wrestle for the world championship and a main event of a pay-per-view. But what do I know? You know, in person, in the arena, it was kind of hard to gauge like how people were feeling, because I think like similar to me, like you're not like vocalizing what you think a bit. You're probably like thinking what the hell's going on. And I think that, I mean, that was probably the prevailing thought of like, what the hell is this? They're really going to have Adam Cole and Jay White wrestle? Now, they do the whole thing. MJF comes out. He wrestles the match. And then not only does he wrestle a match, he wrestles a 30-minute match with Jay White. The guns are out there. The guns get involved. They get the old heave-ho from Bryce Remsburg. And MJF and Adam Cole. Adam Cole was in MJF's corner. He had a MJF's vest, I believe, and he was teasing to throw in the towel, which is something they've done numerous times now at this point when Jay White was working over the leg, had him at a figure four. That was, I don't know if to say like a big believable ending, but it was definitely like a dramatic part of the match that a lot of the crowd was kind of was getting into. And MJF pulls out some spots that we don't see from him. It's kind of typical of this MJF babyface character where he'll, you know, break out those like really athletic moves that we don't see from him. But on the other hand, he's supposed to not have a working leg, really. I mean, he was selling it. He was agonizing over it and all that. And it was believable. He was doing good work. But then he just pulls out a jumping over the top rope cutter to the floor with a bad leg when he can like barely walk. Like, I'm usually not the cell police here, but that, I thought that was insane. Like, what are we doing that for? He also, what else did, oh, he did like a backwards mule kick with Jay White kind of like doing a headstand almost on the corner turnbuckle. Visually, I thought that was cool. I don't know how it came across on TV, but it looked cool from where I was sitting. And after all that, Jay White loses to MJF in 30 minutes. Like, I just don't know how you can build Jay White as a credible championship challenger after that. The man had, like, everything lined up in his way, or, you know, lined up in favor of him. MJF, one leg. He knows what to target. He was targeting him the whole match. And he still lost. Like, I get it. The story was about MJF, and Jay White was kind of an afterthought, which sucks, because I still believe Jay White can be a top tier, maybe not face of the company, because I think he's better suited as a heel, but he can be one of the guys in that company, and I just don't know how you can get back from that at this point after this match. The focus was just so heavy on MJF that's what they were looking after. They were like, okay, we're going to do all this stuff for MJF. We're going to have him do all these different things and the focusing about him. When I think Jay White was drastically hurt by this. He could not beat the one-legged man in an ass-kicking contest. And I mean, the match, like, it was fine, and it was like there was some moves to it, but I know this is kind of my shtick where I want everything to be logical, but like the story and everything in this match was just so over the top and unbelievable that it was kind of hard for me to like get into it. And wrapping it all back around, they didn't need to do all this bullshit. They could have just had MJF and Jay White wrestle the exact same match. He can sell the leg, whether it was from an attack earlier or just in the match, Jay White goes after the leg, and he's selling it, and he, you know, is working his ass off, and he's trying to gut through it. You could have told the exact same story, but yet they went over the top. They got cute with it. They had to do the whole, I don't even know, like, what to call the Adam Cole, like, tease. But they did it, and I thought that I was just not a fan of that. As you guys could probably tell, was not a fan of the MJF, Adam Cole, Jay White kind of saga that took place throughout the entire night. But MJF retains. He gets his title back. As I said, I think Samoa Joe is probably going to be the next contender for that championship, but we will see. A lot of people were staying in their seats waiting to see what would happen. The, you know, Adam Cole, MJF, they're all happy, you know, cheering, yada, yada, yada. And I was looking around the crowd to see where they were going. And for the most part, everybody stayed in their seats. Like, yes, there might have been some stragglers here and there, but they stayed in their seats. They were waiting for the devil. They were waiting for something to happen. And nothing happened. I don't know exactly when they faded to black on the pay-per-view, but they just kept going. Adam Cole and MJF walk up the ramp, Jay White selling, and then Justin Roberts gets on the house mic and was like, thank you, guys. Thanks, Los Angeles. It was a great time. Hope to see you next time. And that's when everyone's like, okay, I guess they're not doing the devil thing, so let's get the hell out of here. And then as I'm walking through the concourse, I can hear Tony Khan, you know, doing his whole spiel about how much he loves LA and the Lakers or whatever the hell he was saying. I couldn't really picture it out. I was trying to get out of there. But yeah, I mean, this was, you know, the main event of this, I thought kind of what was not a good look, not a good, I mean, the match, as I said, match itself was fine, but just everything else, not a big fan of. Now let's circle back. Let's go to the pay-per-view proper. That was the pre-show, dumbass. Opener, Sting, Darby Allin, Adam Copeland with Ric Flair in a six-man tag go up against Christian Cage, Luchasaurus, and Nick Wayne. 15:10 is the time on this one. You know, the old joke about Adam Copeland can't go to both sides of the arena when he does his entrance. Well, this time he could, because it was a pretty packed building. They come out with the face paint, the war paint, everyone looking like Sting, and the Christian Cage, the Tron, it had 10 adjectives for him. Every time they count down, there was a new one, and I was sad that to hear that they didn't show all 10 of them on television, because they were all great. I can't remember what they're all saying, but the climax was one. It was like, you know, devoted father or something like that, and the crowd got a big kick out of that. You know, opening match, crowd's gonna be really hot, and they were for this. They, you know, love Sting, Darby, and Copeland. They really did like Cage. They were kind of indifferent to Luchasaurus and Nick Wayne. Ric Flair got, you know, the obligatory woos, and he got a pop. So they were in a good spot to be in. Crowd was over. You know, still kind of, I don't know if they not reeling, but kind of didn't know what to do with the whole MJF stuff to end the pre-show. But you know, bring the baby faces out, have a good match, exciting match. And the Bayfaces ended up winning. The story throughout was Adam Copeland and Christian Cage teasing a you know, some interaction, but that never happened. And Christian, you know, whatever, tucks tail, it runs away. So they're saving that presumably for next month. Maybe they hold it off all the way to Revolution. I don't know. You know, that's when Sting's last match is going to be. Is it going to be in a tag team match like that, or is it going to be in a singles match and they get Copeland and Cage in a singles match for the TNT title? We will have to wait and see about that. Post match with Sting, you know, really soaking in from the crowd. I think this was a good spot for Sting. You know, the crowd was really giving his flowers. Somebody like hopped the barricade and went in the ring with Sting. No idea who that was. I forgot to look it up. People were saying it was his son. I don't know who he was, but obviously, you know, it meant something for Sting, whoever that guy was. And Darby got on the mic and said, you know, give it up for Sting. This is his last match in California. If that's true, I mean, great to be there, especially because me and Philip were there for the Oakland show. So I guess that means I've seen Sting's last two matches in California, which is a fun little nugget to say. Yeah. I mean, I think if we go back, I maybe would put a different match in the opener. But because this was the opener, it was a fun kind of palate cleanser, I guess, maybe like the heavier angle they did at the end of the pre-show. So yeah, it was good stuff here. Then Orange Cassidy defends his AEW International title against Jon Moxley. This one goes 12 minutes. Crowd was into both guys. I think because they were kind of two guys the crowd liked, there wasn't like one devoted side for Moxley or one devoted side for Orange Cassidy. And I was pretty excited for this match. I thought they told a really good story. The promos that both guys cut going into this show, I thought were fantastic. But just for me personally, the match didn't like really hit for me. I don't know if that's because I was, you know, in the building, and so a lot of the stuff that they were doing was kind of more grappling, more punching, and, you know, not big moves that kind of plays to the entire arena, maybe played better on camera and on television. But and they kept it slow, or not slow, but they kept it short rather. And, you know, looking back, that's probably for the better, because we don't need, you know, more minutes on this show. But Cassidy gets his win back. So now it's tied up at 1-1. We're going to get a third one eventually. Is that in the near future or in the distant future? Who knows? But, you know, solid match. And, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of the matches on there where there's not too much to talk about. But this was another one here because Cassidy gets the win. They teased, Trent came out. So maybe they're doing some, they're probably going to do some sort of mix, or not. Meh. No, I don't think Blackpool Combat Club's going to get a woman in the thing. But, you know, maybe they will. But, yeah. Moving on. Speaking of women, we got the AEW Women's World Championship. Timeless. Toni Storm takes on the champion, Hikaru Shida. This one goes 10-25. And your new Women's champion is Toni Storm. Toni was over. You know, people liked her. People like Shida too. The pop for the entrances was kind of strange because people like Toni. They're into her, but maybe it's just the music doesn't play to kind of a pop like that. Because you could definitely tell people liked her. You know, they got a kick out of her. But then, like, when Shida's music played, I thought Shida got a surprisingly good reaction compared to Toni. I thought it was going to be much more in favor of her. But maybe it's the, you know, the crowd respects Shida or whatever the case may be. But, you know, as time went on, they worked a good match, a little plotting at times, you know, kind of awkward with, you know, Luther giving Toni Storm the, you know, great, you know, at least from my vantage point, because I think a little bit farther away, she completely got me with the okie doke. I did not notice that, you know, Luther put one shoe in her tights and then gave her the other one for Toni to, like, obviously get the referee distracted, and then she hits her with the other one. So I thought that was a clever little spot. They put a tray, because I think Luther, like, has the shoe on a tray or something, so she put the tray on her backside and hits her with the hip attack, and she gets the win. You know, from, once again, from my vantage point, it looked fine, but then I guess on television, like, the plate was, like, literally almost on the ground because it was falling out of her trunks so much. So Aubrey kind of looked like an idiot there, but a big pop for Toni to get the win. And once again, Shida is kind of another transitional champion. You know, it sucks for her, but I think this was the right move. The women's division in AEW desperately needs, you know, a revamp, fresh coat of paint, whatever cliche you want, but put the title on Toni. Run with her. She's a hot new act that people are into. And just see what you got from her. I think there's too many times that AEW, you know, Toni is kind of set in his ways and he knows what he wants to do. He has a long-term plan, which is good. But also sometimes you need to learn to adapt. And maybe this was, I don't know when the plan was to have Toni be the champion, but I thought this was a good decision to put the title on her and see what they can get out of it. Because, you know, gimmick like that, it is kind of hokey, but Tony's a good enough wrestler that if, you know, once he gets into the ring, it doesn't need to be all that wacky. But there was wacky aspect to this, no doubt. She did the whole, you know, wind up, punch, uppercut, whatever it was. The whole, you know, ending, you know, after the match where she's like lying on the ground with it. And I guess the screen turned to black and white once she won. Mariah May comes out, she gets the flowers. Toni completely no-sells her, but she takes the flowers and, you know, parades around with it. So it was a good time. Match itself was fine again. But yeah, moving right along, got the four-way tag team ladder match for the titles. Ricky Starks and Big Bill defending against La Facción Ingobernable, Rush Angelístico con Jose the Assistant, and Presto Vance, the half-repper. FTR... and Kings of the Black Throne, Malakai Black and Brody King. And this one goes 20 minutes, 35 seconds. If I say a four-way tag team ladder match in AEW, I think you know what's going to happen, especially with some luchadors and Malakai Black and Brody King. They are, oh yeah, and Ricky Starks and Big Bill and FTR were there too, but they're not there to fly around. This match was crazy, hard-hitting. There was a lot of spots involved. It was kind of hard to see where they were, where everything was at once. Cause there's like eight people all in the ring at one time, plus the two guys on the outside. So there was just a lot of moving parts and it was kind of hard for the crowd to keep up with it. But the crowd, You know, pop for the big spots. I would say, like, to this point, this was probably the best match of the night. Probably just because it's a match that's a spectacle. There's a lot of stuff going on. There's, you know, there's ladder spots. People are jumping all over the place. There's high spots and all that other stuff. So the crowd definitely was into this. And, you know, overall, the LA crowd, it was an okay. It was a good crowd. Don't get me wrong. But, like, for an AEW pay-per-view, I thought the crowd was a little bit flat, to be honest. Like, it got up at points. But I would also probably point to just where AEW is right now. It's not a hot product. There's not a lot of stuff that the crowd is really getting behind. Like, there's stuff they get kicks out of, like the Tony Storm act or like the MJF stuff, or, you know, Julia Hart winning the title got a really big pop, surprisingly. One of the bigger pops of the night, to be honest. But, you know, the LA crowd is someone, well, I mean, I've been to SummerSlam, but that's, you know, almost 10 years ago at this point. It's a WWE crowd, completely different. So an LA AEW crowd in the year of the Lord 2023, kind of expected more, to be honest. But Ricky Starks and Big Bill end up getting the win. They retain. Really fun match. I mean, just all over the place. I saw Brody King, you know, was gushing with blood. It looked like it was, I do not know where exactly that happened, but they, you know, they went back to that ladder spot where they have it bridged from the edge of the ring apron to the timekeeper's area. And there was just, you know, there was a few spots that they did there. And Brody King did not look great. He didn't look great physically, but I thought he looked great in the ring and kind of what he was doing in there. Hopefully everybody walked out of there in relatively healthy fashion. Starks and Big Bill retaining, you know, it is what it is. I could take it or leave it. If you're going to, you know, have them lose the title, it probably would mean more if one of them, you know, takes a pin and the other team, like, really beats them instead of just winning a ladder match. But, you know, and there wasn't really, like, a close second, I would say, or, you know, like, a team that really the crowd was behind. I think it was just another one of those AEW type matches where the crowd liked everybody. They had kind of their favorites. You know, down in LA, there's a lot of Mexican fans there. So, you know, Rush and Jalisco definitely got their pops. FTR was over, but, you know, there was I think it was Cash hit like a low blow on Brody King in the corner. You know, Cash hit a low blow, got a big, you know, reaction for the crowd. They booed him, but it wasn't a sustained boo. And they kind of booed the spot. They didn't boo the wrestler. And, you know, Kings of the Black Throne, they're over, but they're just not really on TV all that much to, I think, gain the type of momentum that they could. So I think they can, if they're going to keep one of these, there is a new number one contender that we'll talk about. But moving along. I kind of forgot, to be honest, where they placed in the card. But Will Ospreay is the new signing for AEW, the big announcement that Tony Khan, one of the many big announcements that Tony Khan has made over the past couple weeks. You know, he got a really big pop. The people around me, really, I mean, at least, like, there was the girl next to me who was really excited for Will Ospreay. News leaked, you know, a day or two before that it was going to be him. You know, you never know what those things. Can't trust the dirt sheets, brother. But it ended up being true. I think that's probably the best outcome. If it's not going to be Mercedes, and we all know it's not going to be Punk, I think Ospreay was probably the biggest name they could get. So it was that much of a disappointment. The other thing is, you know, he's wrestled with he's wrestled in AEW before. He's, you know, been there a time or two, and then he isn't going to be with the company until after January. So I don't know why they really had to do this right now. Like, you could have him sign in secrecy, or if the news gets out, the news gets out. I just don't really know why they did this, like, kind of make it a big deal, which, I mean, don't get me wrong. Will Ospreay's talented, best in-ring wrestler in the world, but it was just kind of awkward that the whole thing is he signs the contract and then he kind of, like, got angry at the crowd, but the crowd wasn't, like, booing him that he, like, isn't going to wrestle right away. It was very weird. Just, like, a very weird presentation overall with Will Ospreay. You know, he comes out, gets a big reaction. He's hyped up, jacked up. signs a contract and he's like, okay, guys, don't get mad at me, but I'm not going to wrestle for like 2 more months for AEW because I love New Japan. And he's saying like bruv every other word. And, you know, he's kind of yelling a little bit. So it's kind of hard to understand him through that thick British accent. And then he was like, yeah, he says, I'm not going to wrestle for like 2 months. He says bruv a lot. And that was it. I was like, okay, that was a segment. Getting back to the wrestling, we got in TBS title match, Chris Statlander defends against Sky Blue and Julia Hart. Crowd was kind of dead for this, you know, presumably so after the big tag title match. That just had a lot of spots and stuff of that nature. Couldn't tell exactly, but I think Chris Statlander had the like the dodgeball attire. She's really leading into the Ben Stiller appearance, apparently. But, you know, I ain't hating. Dodgeball, great movie. Crowd was very quiet throughout the beginning of the match, but credit to them. They kind of got the crowd into it later, similar to the Chris Statlander Julia Hart match from last month. And Julia pins Sky Blue. Crazy finish here, but we had a stolen pin finisher, kind of, you know. Julie Hart didn't full-on just shove Chris Statlander out of the way. She kind of, you know, attacked Chris and then pinned Sky Blue, so it wasn't a full-on stolen finisher gimmick, but nonetheless, Julie Hart steals the pin from Chris Statlander to get the win. Big pop, like surprisingly big pop for Julie Hart winning the championship. I don't know if it's just the typical champion, you know, new champion pop that a crowd would get, but the crowd was definitely behind Julia Hart. I would I think out of the three, I think by far Julia Hart was the most backed wrestler in this match. And going back to the Toni Storm stuff, you know, we have two new women champions in AEW. And I think this is a good kind of benchmark to kind of signify a change to the guard, a new era in AEW's women division. You know, I'm not trying to overblow this by any means, but, you know, you have a new women's, you know, world champion. You have a new TBS champion. So let's move forward and let's try to do something different. Let's try to build upon this and let's get some good work going. I think they coulda, shoulda done the title change back last month with Julia Hart pinning Chris Statlander. I know they're going to build to the singles match again and maybe Julia wins that one. But Julia did kind of cool off a little bit in the past month. She was really over. She had the winning streak going into that match at Worlds Collide, right? I forget. There's too many pay-per-views now at this point for me to keep up with, but last month's pay-per-view. So then, you know, Julia Hart loses, comes back, wins, still gets a good reaction, but I think he could have capitalized on it just a little bit more by having her win last month. But good for her, and let's see what she does with it. Then the match everyone's talking about, and by far my favorite match of the show, Swerve Strickland defeating Hangman Adam Page in a Texas death match. This one goes nearly a half hour. Christian Cage did get a kind of special entrance with an all-women's youth choir. They come out and sing his song or hum his song, since there's really no words to it. But Prince Nana gets the whole Swerve when I drive entrance. He gets like 6 or 8 dancers to dance with him down to ringside, and Swerve comes out, and, you know, Swerve is over. The whole "Who's House, Swerve's House" thing, people love chanting it. Maybe it's a little Pavlovian, but people love it. Also, did not know that the whole Rams, the Los Angeles Rams, their gimmick is call to action, "Who's House, Rams House." So maybe that played into the LA fans loving the call to action so much. But if you haven't seen it, check out Swerve's Instagram and Twitter. He has a little picture. He was at the game on Sunday, as I was too. Okay game between the Seahawks and the Rams. But he was having some fun with the whole "Who's House, Rams House" thing too. But no entrance for Hangman Page. He runs out and just attacks Swerve, and they go back and forth, melee punches and punches and bunches. And this one was a crazy one, folks. The two AEW pay-per-view shows that I went to, there was two Texas death matches featuring Hangman Page. And this one was definitely the more extreme, the more violent, the more bloody of the two. I did really enjoy the one he had with Jon Moxley earlier in the year, but I would say this one had surpassed it. I'm not the biggest fan of like the hardcore, the death matches just for the sake of like hardcore death matches, but this one did have a story behind it. You know, there was the family aspect with Swerve and Hangman's toddler. They, you know, the house break-in. There was a real violence and a real, you know, intensity to it that Hangman had. And that has kind of been, you know, that's lost on him, I think, for a while, almost like the majority of his AEW run. And the crowd was really into Swerve throughout the entirety of the match. And people were booing Hangman Page. Like, even when he was, like, you know, in clear babyface positions, you know, and maybe it had to do with kind of the beginning of Hangman getting the better of Swerve for so long at the beginning that people are just going to naturally get behind Swerve to kind of rally him to fight back. But the crowd just really did like Strickland. They did like Page too. Maybe it was just kind of the performance of, you know, both these guys are just killing themselves for entertainment, so we're going to respect both of them. But I mean, I'm not going to run through every single crazy thing they did. You know, there was barbed wire, there was barbed wire bat, you know, barbed wire tables, barbed wire chairs, there was glass, there was a staple gun, just everything you can think of. And the match, just really gritty, intense. The bloods, I mean, Swerve, just my God, like you can't really tell from where I was sitting how bloody Swerve was. But then they turn the screens on, the Trons, because there's no like middle Jumbotron at the Forum, so the only video boards we had were on the staging area, and they turn them on. I assume for this specific shot, because they turn the Trons on, and the first thing you see is just Swerve Strickland's face just covered in blood, and it's just dripping all over the place. You can hear the crowd just audibly gasp and just like, oh my God, what is happening? And they keep it on. Excuse me. And then they, you know, they turn the screens off, and then the crowd is chanting, "We want screens," and turn the screen on. They ultimately do turn the screens back on, which then gets a pop. And then the last two matches of the night, they had the screens off, but then the crowd is chanting for the screens. And luckily it didn't get like too crazy, but there was just like a section of the audience that was chanting for the screens to be turned on. Like, people, you paid how much money to be in the venue to watch the wrestlers wrestle, and you're chanting to turn a giant video board on that is just going to give you the pay-per-view feed? I get it. People might be sitting at weird angles and you want to see stuff, but for the most part, like, all the matches were like in the ring. Like, I know there was some, they were wrestling kind of on the outskirts of the ring at times, but there was no times where it was like really hard to see what was going on. Everything was pretty much in the ring. So I don't know why those idiots were chanting "We want screen." Probably just chanting something for the sake of whatever. They're a bunch of dumbasses. But the end, I really did enjoy this match. Ending for me wasn't the biggest fan of. We get Brian Cage to come out and Swerve, you know, on behalf of Swerve, and attacks Hangman. Hangman makes a comeback. He beats up on Brian Cage. So he gets flown out. We get Prince Nana going through a table. Those animals, after all this, like 20 minutes or maybe 15 minutes in the match, they chanted, "We want fire." Like, my God, people, do you not see what these people have gone through? I don't care if that was fake glass. Shout out Jack Perry, wherever he is right now. And, you know, as I said, barbed wire and all these other things. And they chanted "We want fire," which was kind of funny, but on the other hand, like, come on, people, that they have families. And then Swerve brings out the chain, chokes him out, and Hangman, and he also hits him with a cinder block, which was used earlier. I don't know if that was the same cinder block. This one, the second one exploded, so maybe that one was a gimmicked one. I don't know, but this match was just insane, crazy. If this was too much for you, I definitely could understand. As I said earlier, there's a woman to my left, and there was a guy sitting on my right. Both of them were not the biggest fans of this match. I mean, I think they liked the drama of the match. I don't think they liked the brutality and the grotesqueness of it, which I definitely could see, because this one, there's kind of the stigma of AEW, there's blood, you know, blood and guts, but This one kind of took it to a new level, and this could be like the tipping point to where like people like the blood or are okay with it, but then it kind of gets to that next level, and this one definitely took it to that next level. But fantastic match, and I would presume we're going to get another one to where maybe Hangman wins, maybe Hangman takes some time, I don't know, but Swerve, they got something with him. I think he's super over. People like him. Prince Nana, you know, Prince Nana's goofy, but he doesn't, you know, seep into the Swerve Strickland act. Like the MJF Adam Cole stuff, they're both goofy. It seeps into their in-ring characters, and that, you know, plays out on screen and kind of the indifference and everything that I talk about why I don't like them. But Prince Nana is a good, you know, the antithesis almost to what Swerve is right now, especially with how intense he is. And I would not be shocked if we're sitting here 6 months from now and Swerve Strickland's a babyface, because I just think he is super talented, too talented to ignore. And at this point, like, they still have MJF with the title. I think Swerve is the guy to take it off of him. If it's not Jay White, I think it should be Swerve. Takeshita's kind of like a long shot that I don't think people talk about too much, but I think him and Don Callis' family could be something. But Swerve Strickland at the moment, I think it would be my favorite person to take that title off of MJF. Moving on to the penultimate match, Golden Jets, Chris Jericho and Kenny Omega take on the Young Bucks. If the Golden Jets win, they get the Young Bucks number one title, tag team title shot. If the Young Bucks win, Kenny and Jericho can never be a team. This one was sandwiched in between the epic Texas Death Match and the main event of MJF and Adam Cole. And at this point, we still thought it was going to be an Adam Cole Jay White match. And this one goes 20 minutes 45 seconds. I think if you're gonna look at the match placement, you could put this one in the opener. I just think that either put this match in the opener or earlier on in the show, or cut the time off. This match did not need to be 20 minutes. And I think that was reflecting the crowd. The crowd was just dead silent for this, for the beginning of it. It was very similar to the TBS title match where, they like the guys involved. The guys kind of got receptions for their entrances. Chris Jericho's always going to get the people to sing along to Judas. But, in-ring wise, the crowd was just kind of sitting on their hands for the entirety of this match. And, the Young Bucks, they're from the Los Angeles area. They were getting boos. Wasn't like overwhelming boos, but they're still getting boos. There was even a CM Punk chant at one point unfortunately, I looked away like at the wrong time to where one of the Jacksons did something and it enticed a CM Punk chant. Who would have thought we were going to get a CM Punk chant in the Young Bucks home area in a Young Bucks match? But I digress, Shadow Taz. Then we get kind of the crescendo of the match was Nick, I think, hitting a low blow on Kenny and then hitting a low blow on Chris. And that kind of cemented the heel turn. Kind of a weird, unnecessary, like, swerve bro of Kenny. They do the spot with the low blow. Kenny makes a save. Then they wrestle for a little bit. Then Kenny teases he was going to do the V-trigger on Jericho after like all these things happened right up beforehand where he clearly showed he was with Jericho. And I was like, that's weird. Why would he do that to Jericho? And then it just was all a swerve bro just for him to, hit the ropes two times and go to hit Nick Jackson on the other side of the ring. So I thought that was just an unnecessary like fake drama part of the match, but Jericho and Kenny Omega get the win. Kenny kicked out of the One Wing Angel from Matt Jackson, I do believe. And Jericho and Kenny win, so they are the new number one contenders for the AEW Tag Team Championships. If they were to win them against Big Bill, I'm not like so down on that. I mean, Starks and Big Bill, they kind of have their spot. They're doing okay. If Jericho and Kenny win, kind of have been there, done that for Kenny. Especially like at a lower level with like Jericho as his tag team partner, and who knows what else, what other kind of matches there. It's more just where the tag team division is in AEW right now. The tag team division in AEW is not great, and I think kind of putting Kenny in that scene is a waste of his talent in the back end of his prime. So, you know, maybe they lose, or the Young Bucks, you know, screw him out of it. But they throw a temper tantrum. They chuck their shoes into the outside to the crowd. I couldn't tell what they're wearing. I think they're wearing Kobe's, but I couldn't exactly make out what shoes they were wearing. But yeah, they're very long. A long protest from them. But yeah, that was that match was good. You know, the crowd was silent, but then they kind of got up for the ending of the show, and you can kind of sense the theme here. Like, everything was fine, nothing was spectacular. I would say outside of the Texas Death Match, there were some high points. The low points, I would definitely say, would be the whole MJF Adam Cole Jay White just shenanigans. That was throughout there. But yeah, overall, I'd give this like a mild thumbs up, like a very, very light thumbs up. If we're going with the letter grades, I'd probably give this like a C+ pay-per-view. I was very tired going into the show, and I was even more tired coming out of the show. So maybe that did kind of play into my enjoyment of the show. But, you know, going to Revolution earlier in the year and then going to this one to close out the year pretty much, I would lean Revolution as the better show overall, mainly because, you know, the MJF Danielson match I thought was fantastic, still match for the year contender. The Texas Death Match of the Moxley Page might not have been better than the Texas Death Match in this one, but that was a good match as well. And just kind of top to bottom, I just thought it was kind of a better show overall, and I just think it kind of shows the you know, where AEW is going right now, or at least where AEW is at the moment. Just kind of a little bit on the downturn. It's not like in the dumps like people might say it is, but it's definitely not a hot product at the moment. But that was AEW Full Gear. Let us know what you thought of it. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at all the certain social media platforms that you would wish to. Me and Philip, Katie, Marley, who knows who's going to show up on Wednesday, but we'll be back for a regular scheduled episode of the Bullet Cast. So thank you guys very much for tuning in. And as always, goodbye and good night. Ba-bang.